Welcome to episode 220 of Sports Geek. On this week's CEO series episode, I chat with Sport Australia's CEO, Kate Palmer.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here is your host, who is improving his 3-and-D game ready for call-up, Sean Callanan.
Yes, I'm Sean Callanan, who was shooting hoops this morning to find my 30, which will become apparent why I'm saying so with today's interview with Kate Palmer. She's the CEO of Sport Australia, and we discuss her career. But until I get to that point, as always, you can contact me the old-fashioned way. No, not by fax. Via email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com or via Twitter at sportsgeek is the company handle, or at Sean Callanan is how you can get in touch with me. You might be listening to this podcast. You might be doing so on sportsgeekhq.com. This episode will be 220. You can always go sportsgeekhq.com/episode number. Have a lucky dip sometime. Put in a number. See where it ends up. Or you could be listening to this podcast on Pocket Cast, my favorite podcast app. You could be listening to it on Google Play or Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you prefer. Let us know if it's not on your platform. I will get it on the platform of your choice as soon as I can. Just before we get into this interview, stay tuned for an update from inside the world of esports. I've got an update from what's happened in the last week. It's been a busy week. But before I do talk about that, I want to talk about digital to dollars. As you know, if you've been listening to the podcast, I did a digital to dollars workshop with the AFL recently with a bunch of the AFL clubs. It was terrific. Lots of good ideas bouncing around audience and content and the different theories around distribution and what social media channels, and some really good discussion around value and valuation and rate cards and how to develop a pitch. So that's the pillars. They're the five pillars of digital to dollars. The first three, know your audience, know your content, know your distribution, work for any business, sport or otherwise, to get your digital strategy and content plan sorted so you know what the roadmap is for you. So I'm happy to discuss it, how digital to dollars process can help you sort your digital content plan, and then if you're in the sports space and the sports rights space, understand the value of that content and how to go out and pitch that to market. I'm really looking forward to applying that with my esports business and my esports team in the OPL, newoplteam.com.au. I'll talk a little bit more about that later, but please get in touch, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. Go to digital to dollars to learn more. Now, time for my guest. Kate Palmer is a longtime sports executive and an absolute trailblazer in the sports world here in Australia. I've been waiting a long time to chat to Kate, and so I'm really pleased to have her as part of our CEO series, as she is now at CEO of Sport Australia. So here is my chat with Kate Palmer. Very happy to be here at the Melbourne offices of Sport Australia, formerly the Australian Sports Commission. Welcome, Kate Palmer, CEO of Sport Australia.
Thank you.
So before we get into your role here, how did you get your start in sports?
Well, I played, and I grew up in country Victoria.
Yep.
And I don't think there was a kid in country Victoria that wasn't involved in the local netball or football or softball club. And so I was really fortunate to be part of some really great communities, I think, who gave a damn about their children and what they were doing. And so it was a pretty idyllic lifestyle, I have to say.
So, yeah, so you were part of that, the football-netball combo that happens over winter in country Victoria?
Well, no, actually I played for the local netball association.
Okay.
And in those days it was very early, so they were competitors of the netball association, but certainly the local football netball was just such a great You know, we used to go and follow the footy actually and watch. But no, it was a really vibrant community, and it was beyond. I lived, grew up in Shepparton, so it was a Golden Valley League, and so you did travel around a bit to watch a lot of football.
And so that's your sporting background. Then what? Then how did you get into the sports business and the business side and the administration side of sport?
Yeah, actually, it was really – I took I always was passionate about sport and thought I would work in it, went overseas and really had – I guess it was a bit of an epiphany around, well, if I was going to do something for the rest of my life, what would it be? And decided I would go back and study. And so I went to what was to then Phillip Institute and ended up finishing an honours degree in sports science, loved every minute of it, met some great people. And then I was actually literally as I was graduating offered two roles. One was – with the then it was RMIT and also then a job with Netball Victoria. So, of course, netball was my passion and so I accepted the netball role and the rest is almost history.
The rest is history because it's a long, you know, a long career for the people who don't know. You were with Netball for Victoria for
10 years.
10 years and then moved to Netball Australia in a chief executive role. So I guess what were some of the – and not to condense a 20-year career into a couple of minutes, but what were some of the big wins in your years at netball?
For me, it was about you know the role that netball played for women in this country, and for me, it was this game that gave so much more than just sport. It was about a position for women. They were volunteers, they were coaches, they were officials. It was the opportunities that they didn't get in other sports generally. This is in the early days. But I also had a passion for change and creating new ways of doing things. So, and it was really, I was fortunate there were, you know, the first CEO I reported to was almost like a mentor, and he shared so much. In actual fact, gave me the grounding I think I needed to become a really good administrator and then ultimately a leader. And yeah, so I just I met some amazing people. They were probably the best thing about any sport is really the people you meet and get to work with. It is also not only the best but can be the worst.
Completely.
Yeah.
Do you think, you know, from those early days and having a mentor and now you're in that CEO chair and you have been for a long while, is that something that you've taken in the way that you're working with your staff and as a leader?
I think I really that's really critical to me that I can support. But I guess I get as much out of it as they do because – for me, it's about the pleasure of actually sharing but also learning what they're doing and what they're thinking. It certainly helps you to decide where you're heading if you have a view on different perspectives.
So, again, for our international – for the international listeners, you know, they would not know, I guess, the size of netball in Australia and especially with, I guess – I'm reticent to say, you know, renaissance of women's sport, but the amount of buzz is getting across different sports. There's a little bit of netball's been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I mean, it couldn't be more exciting for me now in this role that. So netball led the way in terms of professional sport for women in this country, and there's, you know, millions of players and it's in every corner of this country. But to see, and you're absolutely right, it's actually a revolution in women's sport in this country, and to see that any young woman now can look up and say, well, if I want to be and I'm good enough, I can play any sport in this country and I can play a lot of them professionally, be paid to play just like my brother or my father did, is, I think, it's one of the most exciting things for me. And I celebrate, I try and make sure people give them a bit of space to get it right because we're still on the journey, so it's not perfect yet. You know, it's the old saying, if you can't be it, you can't if you can't see it, you can't be it.
Yep.
And that's absolutely true. So now we've got, and you only have to see with the Matildas, you know, Australian women's soccer team, the young boys and girls who in actual fact, children today won't know that women – They'll assume that women played these sports professionally.
Yeah,
they won't know that it was. This is just something new. It will be normal to our next generation.
Yeah, which is amazing because they've, you know, the heroes that have been built up in netball and all these sports, and you know people like Sam Kerr as a Matilda, you know, and that and I think I spoke about it on a recent podcast, the girl that got the jersey and the video went viral when she cried, and then they followed up with her meeting and she was speechless, and it meant as much to Sam as it meant to the little girl.
Yeah, well, I don't know whether you've seen the clip where some little boys knocked on Sam's door, which is probably, you know, it's a bit of a worry, but they said, could you come outside and play? And, of course, Sam Kerr went over the road into the park and kicked around with these two boys. But I also did see the Matildas after their game in Newcastle. You know, they went round the boundary for an hour signing autographs, and I think that's the essence of I think that's something we see in sport that women play or women in sport. So I think it's great. I mean, we've always had wonderful basketballers and, you know, there are lots of Australian females that, you know, Lauren Jackson, our absolute hero and legend who's played in the US. I think now seeing them in our own backyard is exciting.
So you took on the role as Chief Executive Officer of – was it then the Australian Sports Commission when you took over?
Yeah, it was.
So take us through a little bit of, again, what does the Australian Sports Commission do and what role does it play in sport, and then, why it's now known as Sport Australia.
Yeah, so we're a government agency, but the peak or lead organisation is Country for Sport. And so the key things for us are, you know, getting Australians moving. So it's around participation and community, around integrity, a really broad responsibility around integrity, about international reputation, inspiration, aspiration from international success. So that's the high performance piece. And then how do we build a really robust industry? So how do we make sure that our industry, you know, it contributes $83 billion a year to the Australian economy. Are we making sure that our sport organisations are successful? So I came into the role 20 months ago, and for me it was really around trying to turn what appeared to what was a government agency, but we also behaved like a government agency. How do you become touchable and how do you become real to the Australian public? So Sport Australia, it was incredible. Immediately this positioning, a new strategy, a new name, and the launch of the Move It campaign and Find Your 30, we've had corporates knocking down the door because they want to partner with us. There's not a corporate in this country that doesn't believe in making sure their messaging is around being healthy and active. So we're touchable now. We actually, people can relate to us in a much better way. So it was such a good move for us. And it makes sense, and it's easy. It rolls off the lips. It just is. People have embraced the new name.
Because the Australian Sports Commission does sound like all you're doing is creating reports that people are looking at and they're reporting.
We still do that.
And it does have that. But Australia allows you to be, tap into the essence of Australia. It is sport is a really big part of it. And, you know, how do you engage, you know, what we call in the industry the NGOs and those kind of things, the national governing bodies of all the different sports to help roll that out.
Yeah, that's right. And, look, I think for us now it frees us up to be very different. You know, we're looking at a lot of commercial partnerships. You know, our reach is massive. You know, we have thousands, or actually we have over 100,000 children visit our site at the Australian Institute of Sport each year. But there's, hundreds of thousands of children in our schools program. You know, our reach is massive, and that's what Corporate Australia is interested in.
And so you talked about Find Your 30. That's all about the participation, but really getting Australians moving.
Yes.
How has that been received so far, other than the corporates that want to be in that social good space and you know, well-being space, with both their customers and employees, but how's it been received?
Yeah, very well received. And look, at the moment it's an awareness campaign, so it's about, you know, we know Australia, actually globally we know the trend is that people are not moving enough. They're very, in children, I guess, is a really quite a dire situation in Australia, which is quite confronting. And our health budget is going through the roof because Australians are just not healthy enough. So how do we get people moving again? So an awareness campaign, but a call to action. And that's what Find Your 30 is. 30 minutes a day is pretty easy for most people to find. It can be through sport or it can be in a physical activity space. So that's the other thing we've done. We've breached beyond sport in the traditional sense.
Because it's not the Saturday morning, you've got to go play footy or netball or cricket, which is, again, what we grew up with from a generation to, you know, this casual fitness, running, walking.
Absolutely.
The fact that sport as a product, if you will, is changing.
Absolutely. And I think sport in this country recognises that people want to consume their products in different ways. So how do we make sure that we are looking to the future and what people need? And certainly, our open spaces are really important because then it needs to be safe, so well lit for women.
Yep.
So it's been really well received, and making sure that, you know, children need a bit more than that. They need about 60 minutes a day. But are our schools a space for that? They're a captive audience, but are we delivering the right product into schools? So kids are, I guess, are motivated. Well, they need to learn how to move. I met the global head of sport from Apple, and I said to him, you know, children in Australia are starting school and they can't run in a straight line. And he said, children should never run in a straight line.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, you know what, you're so right. And I think this is the thing, we've got to get back the joy of movement and making sure that people have a lifelong love of being physically active. And it doesn't have to be a chore, and every single person in this country could do it. So it's been really well received, and certainly sport in this country, it's open source material, so they're starting to use the brand and the philosophy of it. And so next step will be really interesting about how we now expand what that means.
And so that's when it does, I guess, flow down to the different sports and say, how can we put our hand up in this space? How can we provide a sport or a product or an offering that fits into these people that are looking to get active? Because once you start getting active and finding your 30 and doing, you're like, oh, this, I do feel better.
Yeah,
I do want to do more stuff. And so that opens up the opportunity from a participation point of view to whether it's, you know, mixed netball or softball in the park or AFL 9s or whatever it is, those different products start becoming more viable.
Yeah, and look, we're leveraging the campaign by putting out grants that actually encourage people there's the better aging grants, there's local infrastructure grants, there are new participation grants, which are all branded and labelled with the Move It campaign. But I think that you're absolutely right. It's actually, let's be easy on ourselves. So if you miss a day, does it really matter? Well, it's probably better for you to do it every day, but don't be too hard. Just start again.
Yeah.
And so I think if we can get Australia moving, and you know, we know behavioural change, it's not easy. So, but we're really excited about the starting point. We've started the journey.
So sport is a big part of Australia's history and identity. You know, we are very proud of the success we've had. You know, we've talked about legends like Lauren Jackson and the like, success we've had both here and internationally in a multitude of sport. How does Sport Australia play a role in making sure that stays part of the fabric and, I guess, looking ahead?
Yeah, it's a good question, because I think internationally, you know, we our reputation is based around being a sporting nation, but, you know, we, the competitors internationally now investing much more, for example, in international success. So, you know, we're struggling to keep up with that, and it's something that we're really completely reinventing ourselves, and the Australian Institute of Sport is going through a massive transformation to focus on the things that we can do that no one else in this country can do. So bringing the system together is really important in this country. But we've recently launched some new awards, and it's a recognising that it's beyond medals. It's about the way we feel about our country and being, you know, really proud to be Australians. And how is that reflected in a sports sense is when athletes like Kurt Fernley, our just fabulous para athlete, and what he stands for, it's about how we represent ourselves, the values that are important to our country. And I think, you know, for me, that if we can actually show the value in sport in bringing the country together, but also the values, and we'll slip up, you know. Yep. Sport, that happens. We know that there's sport, but it's not about whether we slip up or not, it's but what we do when that happens. So do we do we actually really come out and say, you know what, I'm accountable, I was responsible, but I'm actually going to change. And I think that's – sport can show those things as well. So it's a really – it's a real microcosm of society, really. It reflects everything about Australia.
Yeah, because it is, you know, it is a tough balance on of that results and, you know, medals and gold medals and titles, which, you know, happens around things like the Olympics and that kind of thing. And we've seen different countries take different approaches. Like London 2012 is all seen as an example, and this is how they've transformed their sport, and this is what they're doing in the university space, this is what they're doing in high performance. But then it's also, you know, how do we get grassroots continuing play, and how do we feel good about ourselves?
Yeah. Look, I think the reality is communities that are connected through, well, anything really, but sport's a really great connector. And people, you know, we know that from a, you know, and I'm not suggesting for one moment that, sport is going to solve the problems of the world, but I absolutely, it does bring people together. It brings nations together. Sport diplomacy and soft diplomacy is really important, but also it brings people together in a community. You know, it does impact on people's mental health. You know, it does impact on the way, you know, our cardiovascular system. It does connect us to community and mean that we feel like we belong. So it can be part of the part of society and part of the problems that we're seeing in society because of the challenges of sitting behind screens and doing all those sorts of things.
Being constantly busy and not finding the 30, as you will. You did mention Kurt Fearnley there, and I will put – I pretty much every time I see a video with Kurt speaking, I just he's a thumb stopper because it's like stop and hit play. So I'll put one of the numerous speeches he's made in the last 6 or 7 months because he's definitely someone to listen to. Tell us about the initiative around the Paralympians and the Paralympics.
Yeah, look, it was pretty exciting. We launched a $1 million equipment fund for the Paralympic movement, so through the Australian Paralympic Committee. And we know that one of the barriers, there are many barriers to people with disabilities. One of the barriers is about having equipment. So how do you get a young person into sport or physical activity if they haven't got a chair that's right, or they haven't got a prosthetic leg, or, you know, how do they do that? How do we get them moving? So breaking one of the barriers down is to provide this fund. And certainly we heard it from a 14-year-old boy yesterday. He's fantastic. He plays rugby, wheelchair rugby. And I have to say his chair did look like a Mad Max chair.
Yep.
It was so fabulous. And
it is referred to as murder ball for a reason. I mean, if you've ever watched wheelchair rugby, it is a brutal sport.
Yep.
They literally just, it's like dodge 'em cars pretty much.
Yeah, but, you know, he doesn't have his own chair. He borrowed the chair, adjusted it to suit him, and then get rid of that barrier, and then start still addressing those other cultural and social barriers. And I have to say, having people like Kurt Fearnley and Matty Rosario, who are absolute legends in their sport in this country, I think this is something Australia can be really, really good at. And I have to say, they've inspired me, and certainly the Sport Australia was really pleased, and the Commonwealth Government was pleased to be able to contribute. And they now have a fund that Corporate Australia can contribute to so that we can sustain it in the long term and make sure any emerging athletes. I know JD Badenhurst at the Winter Paralympics smashed her leg coming down the slope. It was the beautiful titanium. It was incredible.
Yep.
But, you know, replacing that, they're worth a lot of money.
Yep.
So this is hopefully will help athletes like Janie, but it also helped the kid down the corner that wants to have a go.
Yeah, because it's not as easy putting on a pair of runners.
That's right, yeah.
You touched on before, I guess, the importance of high performance, and as much as the success and the reputation that Australia has on the field or the court or the pool, off field in the high performance space and in the sports science space, Australia is very much a world leader. We're seeing a lot of high performance staff working in the NBA and the EPL and those kind of things. We've got a really strong reputation. I know when I walk into a sports organization in the US, the high performance guys are really wary because the Aussies keep taking their jobs. But you also run rolled out a talent program around high performance. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, look, what there is clearly a lack of equity in a number of females in positions of influence in sport in Australia, both in the executive leadership space but also in high performance coaching. So we decided to stop talking about it and to fix that, and we've just launched a program which will – it's an immersion program across 12 months. It will take initially 32 or 16 high-performance leaders, 16 executive leaders, future CEOs, females, into a program. And for us it's about, you know, setting some targets around what's acceptable. And we're seeing more females moving into positions of influence, but not enough. So it was actually I was actually stunned by the response, you know, across my Twitter feed. It was just incredible people. And in actual fact, within 5 days, we'd had 38 applications. We hadn't even really put out much information. Actually, we didn't need to promote it, I can tell you that.
Yeah, all such is the demand.
Yeah, the demand, there's a huge gap. So, and look, we've been talking to some of the professional sports who are launching new leagues for women, and the reality of it, and AFLW is a good example. That's our native game. There are 10 teams and not one of them is a female coach.
Yeah.
And there's a range of reasons. It's not because the AFL doesn't want them to be there. It's the environment. It's about the coaches being ready.
And there hasn't been that, you know, it's practically new, and there hasn't been that coaching pathway.
That's right.
And so you are getting women that are cutting their teeth.
Yep.
So it's about creating that pathway and creating those opportunities.
Absolutely. We need a talent pipeline of high performance coaches, female high performance coaches. So it's a really exciting opportunity for us. The other element was our athlete wellbeing and engagement piece as well. For me, that's about making sure that we care properly for athletes, both during their career, but after their career too. You know, our most significant athletes, they go out of the sport and then I'm not sure how well we engage or keep them connected, and I think we've got to do much better in that space too.
And it must be a good feeling for you. I mean, a well-deserved title, being a trailblazer, being a female CEO, and, you know, ASC, 31 years of operation, and you're the first.
Yes.
But it must be good to have people coming through. I mean, even just this week, Susanna Dinich was announced as CEO of the Premier League. Which is amazing news.
Yeah, it's great. Wouldn't it be great though? One day we won't say, "Isn't that incredible?" That's not a first. But I think let's celebrate it now because we need to. I agree. There'll never be a first CEO of Sport Australia again.
Yeah.
And Raylene Castle, who was our first female CEO of Rugby Australia, said there won't be a first again. And you know, she was a CEO of a rugby league team.
Yep.
You know, one of the toughest places in sport. And the world's changing, and I'm glad that sport is doing something about changing this.
And the program, you know, driving equality, like you were saying before, young girls are just looking at, I can play all these sports.
Yeah.
Those girls will also go up going, all of these roles, whether they be a CEO role, whether they be on a board, will be opening up.
That's right. Yeah, they won't. They'll. I mean, look, it's helped at a director level that we have I guess it is a quota. All of our national sport organisations have to have 40% of their board need to be females, and that's made a massive difference. In 5 years, we've now reached that target, and I think you can see the difference. And so that's been a great thing. So, you know, once you have to measure it, I think that gets done. So we're really pleased about that shift. And, you know, we're seeing now chairs, more female chairs. It's still low, but we're getting there.
Yep. So the, 2018 is nearly in the books.
Mm.
2019, what are you looking ahead and what are you looking forward to for Sport Australia in the next 12 to 18 months?
Well, you know, we're bedding down our new strategy, so it's a very different approach to everything we're doing. You know, it was a major transformation. You know, we've got a workforce of around 470, so, and it impacted most of the organisation. So bedding that down, but then, you know, looking towards Tokyo, you know, our new initiative or new strategy around high performance, a complete transformation. You know, we don't want to put too much pressure on on the athletes, of course, but we're expecting a good showing at Tokyo. But we're looking. I mean, Paris. We're planning for Paris, of course. Like every other nation in the world, will be stop. They'll stop talking about Tokyo soon and start talking about Paris. So that will be really great. But there are a number of things. We want some real measures of Australia being more active. We do want to tackle all of the integrity issues, and we've got some major issues in the transgender space in Australia. You know, there's more than two genders now, and how do we actually make sure that we prepare our industry to be more accepting and welcoming to everybody and make it a safe place? And we're not quite there yet. And I suspect everyone in the world is struggling with this. So we want to take a strong leadership position around those issues to make sure that it shouldn't be an issue. It's about being safe and inclusive.
So I can't, having this interview and be new into esports, to ask you from a sports point of view, where does esports fit?
Yeah, it's a great question. And actually, we've met with the Australian Esport Organisation to talk to them about it, and very impressive people, I have to say. And we've talked about it, is it really a sport? I mean, everyone asks this question, I guess.
Yeah.
And we probably don't want to get caught up in the fact of, do we have to define it?
Yep.
Because there are lots of amazing things. We're talking to the shearers.
Yeah.
Is that a sport? But for me, it's about the good thing about having some role is, I guess our greatest worry would be about the athletes, and I will call them athletes, about are they being cared for properly? And we hear lots of stories, but I think, having heard, spoken to the Esport Association, they're saying these are things we care about too, about their athlete well-being. So I suspect in time that we will we'll endorse a range of organisations that are doing things that are related to sport, that are getting people active and engaged. It seems quite, the contrast of sitting in a room.
Yeah.
But we know sport in this country is, sports are getting involved in esports, we know it's happening. So
yeah, and I guess deeper and deeper involvement and education in the space. Mm. There's so many parallels to sports, the traditional sports that we know. But one of the things that has been really positive in looking at it from the pro player point of view is that they're really taking an athlete and a mindset approach to it.
Yeah,
so they're getting healthier, and they're realizing that their physical performance and finding their 30 helps them be more mentally alert and be able to. And then there's the teamwork factor of they're working as a team, which is the same as on a basketball court and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of similarities. And then partners like Headspace are talking about to esport athletes about how to have the right frame of mind and those kind of things, which is the same thing that AFL players and netballers are all tackling. So there's a lot of similarities, and it's still a relatively new sport when we're talking about old sports that have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. I'm excited to see where it goes.
I think you've got to be open-minded, I think, about these sorts of things. I mean, the other space, regulating, and I don't want to sound that restricting, but regulations mean that all of the challenge you face with that, with integrity, can be addressed. And I think that's, for me, the key. How do we actually make sure that it is a good place for young people to be involved in? And, well, the only way we can do that is to embrace it and say it's going to happen anyway. It's coming like a train.
Yeah.
We might as well get on. And so how do we address that formally? We don't have a policy position on it yet, but, for us, it's actually being part of the conversation.
Terrific, terrific. I want to finish off with the Sports Geek Closing Five.
Yep.
Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
Yes. Well, actually, it was the 1991 World Netball Championship. And Australia won by a goal on the siren.
Where was the game?
It was in Sydney.
Okay.
I can remember it.
Would it have been at the entertainment centre?
It was at the entertainment centre. And it was just the most extraordinary thing. It was the first time since 1963 that the championships had been in Australia. And so I remember that. I can still actually remember walking out and seeing the team, because in those days there was no security. The team were walking onto the bus,
yep,
and it was just, you know, our heroes, you know, these women who are amazing. Mind you, they didn't make the back page of the paper, which was I think an AFL footballer had broken their toe and that took the back page. But I have to say,
but it was a little watershed. Absolutely. And mainstream moment.
Game changer. Game changer.
You know, were they even the Diamonds at that point?
No. It was the Australian netball team then. So, yeah, Vicky Wilson was the captain. And
that's right.
It was extraordinary. Yeah. So, no, I remember that very well.
Mm. Terrific. You would have been to a lot of sports events over your career. Do you have a favourite food memory?
I have to say, with Raylan Castle,
yep,
in San Francisco, watching the Lakers, and we had one of those hot dogs and a beer. Like, yep, I could hardly put my hand around the glass. It was the best hot dog and the tastiest beer I'd ever eaten. And it was because I was there seeing just an extraordinary game, and it was when Kobe Bryant was playing,
yep,
so I was a huge fan of his. So I just loved it.
Terrific, terrific. What's the first app you open in the morning?
Oh, it's a bit boring, but it's the AFR, Australian Financial Review, because it's find out what's going on in the world. Actually, to be honest with you, the first thing I look at is what the market did in the US, because what's going to happen in the Australian Stock Exchange based on what happened in the US the day okay before. So, yeah, it's my guessing game for every morning.
And is that just from seeing where the world is from a business point of view? Has that always been something that...
Yeah, I always think it's really interesting. I mean, Australia does have a major focus on the US. You know, we see a lot of their news, but so it's good from a politics perspective. So, I'm really interested in the stock market. I'm a bit of a company watcher.
Okay,
I watch CEOs of companies and wonder why they make the decisions they do. So it helps me get my daily dose of that.
So I'm going to go off track here, but so in the Australian media scene and the sports landscape keeps changing. You know, Nine and Fairfax are now in. Yeah. We've got new players in rolling out different types of thing. What's your take of the whole sports media scene from a sports point of view?
I think that's the most exciting, actually, because what we as consumers can see now, you know, we can almost curate our own entertainment through sport. And for me, that's the fabulous thing. And when I'm a subscriber to Fox Sport, and so I get to watch sport from all around the world. And I have to say, I'm really, you know, being so far away from everything, it helps. So I'm excited about the future of, and we're doing a major project at the moment to build the capability in the digital space for sport in this country. Big investment from us on that. So, and sports really, like, you know, a lot of our sports in this country are not up to speed yet. So that's an exciting opportunity. So,
and the thing is, you know, the traditional model of the TV broadcast companies will pay 2, 3, 5 sports the money. Like, we're seeing new models bubble up, whether it be, you know, netball and its sort of hybrid deal to all of these other sports saying going with some sort of digital only offering.
Yeah.
It really opens up if you want to watch a particular sport. It will be available.
And you can watch it. That's the thing. It doesn't matter where you are. You can be in the dentist chair, and you can be watching your favourite team. I mean, that's what I love about it. It's this whole new digital world it's not even new now. It's just exciting what we can see and do.
Is there someone that you would suggest the podcast listeners should follow, and why?
I would follow. I'm actually a Twitter user, so I follow a lot of people on Twitter. But there's I would follow someone like Kurt Fernley, actually, because he'll be good for the soul.
Yep.
There's a couple of entertaining people. I follow a guy in the UK. His name's Professor Weed, and he annoys the hell out of me because he actually he has a go at sport and how sport pretends that it can solve the problems of the world. And
okay.
He's an academic, and I feel I seriously one day I'm going to meet him. I'm actually going to, because he's
your own personal troll.
He's very provocative, and he has a go at Sport England all the time about what they claim, and I feel like saying, back off, buddy.
Yeah.
But he's very impressive.
Yeah, Kurt Fernley is definitely a good follow. I think I saw him once. Dave Hughes, a local comedian here in Australia, was complaining that he was hurting after going to the gym for leg day, and Kurt Fernley in a wheelchair, he says, "Toughen up, buddy," and that's what he replied. It's like, and Dave Hughes said, "I've got nothing."
So. You know, one of our really well known para athletes was saying yesterday in ABC Sports, said, "Is there nothing in sport that you can't do?" And he said, "I can't walk." They had nothing after
just
that.
Just silence
either.
On the other
silence
side of the
on
mic.
The other end, yeah. Yeah.
Lastly, what social media platform is your MVP? And you can answer that personally, but then also from Sport Australia point of view.
Yeah. So look, Twitter's a good tool for me because I stay off. I don't make personal comments. I use it for work.
Yep.
It's a great tool to connect with people, and certainly social media. Now our team are using social media more effectively now. Instagram is really critical too, from a Sport Australia perspective. We have a great team, a production team at the Australian Institute of Sport. They do some really cool stuff in the digital space. So it's a great, I think it connects us and engages, and we have conversations. So I really enjoy Twitter, and I'm a bit of an Instagram, but I'll stick to Twitter as my favourite.
That's right. That would be Kate Palmer_CEO.
That's it, yep.
So send Kate a tweet. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast and taking the time. Really appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
New workshops on audience, content, distribution, valuation, and pitch following Sports Geek's Digital to Dollars process. Go to digitaltodollars.com.
Thanks again to Kate Palmer. You can send her a tweet to tell her that you listened to the episode @Kate_CEO. Thanks to Bridget Tilley for helping set up this interview. Episode 220, sportsgeekhq.com/220. And be sure to follow Sport Australia on Twitter to see what they are doing in the space around grassroots participation, a lot of things that we did discuss. Find your 30. And also follow, as Kate suggested, Kurt Fernley. We'll put a link in the show notes. So he is an inspiration, and I hope he will one day be a guest on this very podcast. As promised, I wanted to give you an update on the world of esports. It has been a busy and crazy week. I'm recording this intro and outro obviously a few days before this podcast goes out. We are in the middle of the free agency period of League of Legends here in the OPL, the Oceanic Pro League. And it's crazy. And the good thing is I'm not doing it all by myself. We're really pleased to announce this week that Brandon Defina, a.k.a. Juves, a former OPL player, has hung up the keyboard, if you will, and has come on board as our general manager and head of all things esports. If I want to know about players and the scene, Juves is my guy. So we closed discussions at the League of Legends Origin event at Margaret Court Arena on Saturday. Had a really good discussion about his philosophy as a player and where he sees the scene going. He's also one of seven professional athletes that are the Headspace ambassadors. So he's really, he sees the mental wellness and mindfulness really important to esports athletes, which really aligns with how I see and how we see the opportunity being in the space from a high performance point of view. And so just to kick things off, to really show how esports is a global business, Juves has been in Bali this week, and I've been in Richmond in Melbourne, Australia, and we've been in the player signing period and absolutely in the thick of it, from DMs direct messages on Twitter, to setting up meetings, to setting up phone calls, to using WhatsApp, to talking to players both here and in different parts of the world. It's been an exciting process, and I've really enjoyed talking to the players, understanding their perspective, understanding how the industry is growing, and discussing our plans with some of the players and where we think they fit and how we can help them, how we can help them become better players, with people like Juve's supporting them and the coaching and the support staff that he's going to put in place around the team, but then also what we can do from the sports geek side of the equation in helping them become the best digital performers they can be, and how we can really change up the game, and what opportunities we will offer our players and our team overall, I think is going to be something that's going to be really exciting for the OPL scene, but the esports scene in general, not just in Australia, but definitely taking a global view in everything that we're doing in this space. So stay tuned. If you are part of Sports Geek Nation, I do think you should be in the esports channel, because it is going to get very active over the next couple of years. If you haven't joined Sports Geek Nation, please do so. Go to sportsgeeknation.com and sign up and join people and sports executives, I should say, that work in the industry around the world, that they work in digital, they work in esports, they work in sponsorship, technology and stadiums. Please join them. I'm really enjoying the AMAs, the Ask Me Anything sessions that are run by members. Former guest and good friend Todd Kaflish is currently doing the AMA and fielding questions around technology and stadiums and some of his pet peeves and what stadiums should be doing. If you have not gone into the AMA channel, please check it out. And if you haven't and you haven't joined Sports Geek Nation, please do so, or check out some of the Sports Geek Nation AMA highlights at sportsgeekhq.com. I'd love to see you in there. It's great to have all the AFL club members that were part of the workshop now in there. So go to sportsgeeknation.com for more. Last shout out, last plug. Got a comedy gig, November 30. Jeff Green, Lee Ton are headlining, and I'm merely a support man, but really excited to be able to be on the same bill as someone as experienced as Jeff and Lee. If you want to come along and laugh at me, laugh with me, have a good night out. November 30, Lihir, part of Punchlines Comedy. Please check it out. There'll be a link in the show notes, sportsgeekhq.com/220. Until then, as always, you can get in touch with me at Sean Callanan via Twitter. The DMs are open, and or via email, sean@sportsgeekhq. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join Sports Geek Nation, access to exclusive Slack and Facebook groups with regular Q&A sessions with Sean Callanan. Go to sportsgeeknation.com to join. Need help with your digital rate card? Not sure how to price your assets? Is there a disconnect between digital and commercial? That is where Sean works best, in digital divorce counselor mode. Book a time for a call with Sean to discuss the Sports Geek process. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.